He's the famous frontman pulling double duty for both the Angels and the Screaming Jets. But even one of the busiest musos in Australia still has to stop for lunch and a chat to Oz Music's biggest names. This is the Oztober Lunch with Gleeso from the Screaming Jets.
And this is our Lunch with Gleeso catch-up podcast, with conversations you may have missed earlier and the parts we just didn't have time to play today.
Perth, West Australia, punch above their weight all the time in the music stakes, and it was some 30 years ago, that sounds, makes me feel old, that this guy burst out of Perth with his band, Johnny Diesel and the Injectors, Mark Lazotte. How you going, man?
I'm good, Dave.
Tell us a little bit about that, coming across from the other side of the country and taking the place by storm. What was that like in the early days?
I'm sure there's some people listening just thinking, what's the big deal about coming from the other side of the country?
It's a long drive.
Especially people that, like, the FIFOs, you know, FIFOs, that do it like three times a month. It was a big deal, you know, like, I guess, you know, we watched other bands do it and they'd end up going over and we'd hear like, how they're going? Oh, so-and-so's working in a bakery now and the other one's working in a, you know.
Trying to get the money to get back home.
Yeah, and it's just like, well, what happened to the music? It's like, oh, no, they didn't survive. So, yeah, there were many, and then they'd come back and sort of be, like, defeated and deflated and whatever. And so, yeah, it was creating that great divide was a big deal. And, you know, airfares were really expensive too back then. So, like, this, I remember standing on the train tracks actually one night, you know, a little bit intoxicated, albeit, after leaving a nightclub that I'd probably just played at. And, like, just thinking, wow, these train tracks, I don't know where they go. They probably didn't run straight out of town. They probably just went, like, you know, to the next suburb or something. In my mind, the train tracks that connected, like, where I was to the other side of the country, I just meditated on that and just thought, I need to get on that, this track, you know, like, metaphorically and literally. But it just wasn't that easy. You know, it was kind of, I guess, the feeling that you get when you were, like, well, for me, it was at the age of 18, you know, and I've been playing at that point since I was 14, so I was washed up and jaded at 18. How's that?
and somehow you managed to stick at it.
Thankfully, someone that was posing as our manager at that point was Brent Eccles, who played drums in the Angels. He also did Homegrown on Triple M. Yep. So he had his fingers in a few pies. And, you know, he masterminded, I guess, getting us over the Nullarbor. He put the money in to put our gear on the freight truck. And, you know, we arrived in Sydney with $90 between the three of us that we were on that trip. And, yeah, and we just started doing 9 shows a week. And, you know, that could have been terribly wrong. But thankfully, it just sort of took traction. And, you know, we made some demos quickly. You know, like within a couple of weeks, we were up at Rhino Studios making demos. And somehow we got played. We were getting played on radio without even a record, which was, you know, ridiculous. Yeah, it was just, I guess, a bunch of things that all happened in the right order, but it could have not happened very easily. A lot of people kind of believed at that very early on. We just kind of got out there and played to every person and their dogs, and that really helped as well, you know, because when the record came out, it was like, everyone had sort of seen us and they were like, yeah, we know those guys. We're going to get the record because we've seen them. Yeah, that really helped.
You talk about doing 9 shows a week. It's an impossibility now for young bands to do that type of stuff. It makes it hard for young bands to you know, test their mettle, doesn't it?
It really does. I mean, I remember we were doing 3 shows on the Saturday, and on the way to the 3rd show, I'd be changing strings in the back of the car with the guitar, like, on my lap as we're driving, flying down the M5 or whatever it was, and getting to King's Cross so we could do a 1:30 a.m. spot. That kind of puts an extra layer of skin on you, I suppose. Mm. And I'm sure you guys did it too, you know, like the dark coma, as we called it, the Cardone Cafe. And it was like, why do we need to do this? But then, you know, there's always people that come up, like, later, you know, months after that, and we're like, oh, we saw you at that gig. And it was like, oh, really? Well, I'm glad you remember, because I surely don't. But you're going to get that when you do more shows than you can possibly remember, I suppose. Mm. It's exposure that you just can't. Because I still really firmly believe, even with all the technological sort of advancements that we have social media is without a doubt the best thing that's happened for any artist. But there's just nothing like getting out in front of people. And I still really believe in word of mouth, actually people just actually talking to each other and saying, oh, I saw this blah, blah, blah last night. And, oh, is it, you know, it's too bad you weren't there. And then that person gets FOMO and wants to see it next time. It's as simple as that. And that's how, you know, it happens. It definitely happened for us. So I really do feel for acts that are coming up now because, you know, the live venues aren't as, just not as present. But having said that, you've got artists breaking through YouTube, which is incredible. That's a stage in itself. So, and busking. I mean, you know, Tash Sultana and quite a few other artists, as we know, have actually come out of the Flinders Street Mall, which is just an amazing concept when you think about it, like that busking can actually be a legitimate launching pad for artists.
You started off as a member of a band, albeit the lead member of a band, but you've eschewed the band thing now, and you do a lot of stuff, just you and a guitar. Do you find that more liberating?
You know, I like the fact that I can do it, but I wouldn't say I prefer it or anything. I'm just really lucky, I guess, that I feel comfortable now. I certainly did when I started. It was one of those things I put my toe in the pool and just kind of tested it a little bit. I started at the Sandringham Hotel, actually, in Newtown upstairs at the Sando, doing Mondays. Because I did a few shows when I was in New York, and just from seeing other people do solo shows, I thought, they look like they're having a good time. I want to try this. And so I ventured out and I did some shows with a cellist. I actually did a whole pub tour of Australia with Helen Mountford from my friend the Chocolate Cake playing cello, and it was just her and I on stage in front of like 900 people in a really noisy pub, and I thought, wow, we're getting away with this, you know, this is incredible. she's such a durable cellist. I mean, she was like, put it through a bass amp and everything, it was huge, you know. So it just made me rethink things, and I thought, wow, you know, shift of power and shift of emphasis, and it's actually allowed me to really kind of get intimate with my audience and force me to kind of actually engage, because I'm intrinsically a shy person, which people like find that hard to believe, I guess, when they see me on stage. But for years and years, I felt comfortable with a lot of volume and a lot of people on, at least, you know, enough people on stage to feel like I'm not by myself. So those things are very much a comfort zone. And when you have stripped them away, kind of, you're forced to kind of actually engage with the audience and look at them and listen to them and stuff. And it's quite frightening. And much like a stand-up comedian must feel, I think, you know, I still think stand-up comedy is probably the hardest thing in the world to do. But I've actually become really comfortable with the solo thing, and also started, you know, a few years ago now, thinking outside the box and thinking, well, why do I have to play? I love acoustic guitars, but why is it that when you see someone doing a solo show, it's always an acoustic guitar? I thought, guitar is a guitar. So I started bringing electrics into it and getting louder and louder. And next thing I'm doing, like, tracks off an album that I made, which was called Under the Influence, which is just all my favorite guitar songs. And, you know, doing things like Cinnamon Girl by Neil Young by myself on stage with an electric guitar. I thought, this is lunacy, you know. But people just, you know, they hear one big roaring guitar and a voice, and they can fill in the rest of it. No one comes up and goes, where's the kick drum or the snare drum?
Yeah.
So, you know, it's amazing what the power-ups implied. I guess Rob Hurst from Midnight Oil has always believed in the power of what's implied. Implied power, I think he calls it.
All right. Now, let's talk guitars. How many?
I wouldn't say I'm done, because you're never done, you know. It's like, you're not done.
Something's always going to come up.
Until I'm in an urn or like spread out over the ocean. But I filled out my box of crayons. You know, as a kid, I had the seven, I think it was the 10 box of crayons, and I really wanted the 20 with the sharpener in the side. But I couldn't have it. So, you know, you can't always get what you want. But now I've got, I'm happy that I've got lots of different colors, different animals. No point having like 17 Les Pauls for me anyway. I respect that. But I like to have different examples of, like, I've got my, you know, vintage Japanese kind of quirky stuff. I've got my American classic sort of stuff. You know, I've got the Tele that I bought. It was the first guitar I actually bought when my accountant said to me, look, you know, go out and buy a couple of guitars. You know, you need to, like, spend some money for tax purposes. I'm like, wow, really? That's amazing. So off I went, you know, and I got this guitar that has become a bit legendary. It's an old Tele, and it was old when I got it, but it's got cool things scratched in it because some kids stole it at one stage from the shop before I got it, and they tried to make it look like that was theirs, but so they scratched things into it like a school desktop, and it's got, like, you know, things like Punks, Will the Gutter, and Mossy, Ian Mossy scratched on there, and Jimmy with an I, so yeah, Jimi Hendrix, of course, and then, you know, F off, of course, like, F off, don't touch. It looks like a school desk, which is really cool, and it's the guitar that whenever I'm recording, whether myself with another artist producing, it's like I try my hardest not to just use it all the time, but it's always like, we're doing this, doing that. It's like, yeah, it's good, but let's just try something else. Go and get the telly. And we go and get the telly, and it's like, why didn't we just pick it up straight away? It's a Stanley screwdriver of guitars, I can say. You can't kill it. And it's just always cut through. Whatever's happening in the song, it's just like, there it is. Now I can hear it.
So 30 years on, mate, you're still rocking out. You've put together a bit of a retrospective of your career. What's your touring schedule looking like?
It's pretty full. I have to say I've got some great shows coming up. Yeah, earlier next year as well, after we do this rip around the country. I'm really happy to be on a great bill with Jimmy Barnes, Living End, Joan Jett, I believe, which is going to be really cool. Yeah, they're all in regional areas, but you catch us like all the major cities. We've got some great shows coming, and it's a long show. It's obviously with 30 singles, I've got a lot of singles to get out on stage. So yeah, don't be surprised if we keep you a little bit longer than what you might.
All right, cheers for joining us, Mark. It's been an absolute pleasure to catch up with you, and hopefully I'll be seeing you somewhere out on the road.
The pleasure is always mine.
This is the Oztober Lunch with Gleeso.